Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Welcome to the 100th episode of Mornings with Carmen. It's not any real special occasion other than it's fun to count stuff. And so it's the 200th hour of our time together. It's the 400th conversation that we've had just since the 1st of February. So there you go. We've been at this for 100 days. So here's my question for you this morning. Is anything different about your life because we have spent 100 days together? Are you doing anything differently? Are you thinking anything differently? Are you listening to the news differently? Are you curating your news feed differently? Are you praying the news differently? Are you engaging the culture differently? Are you entering into the conversations of the day, having cultivated the mind of Christ and approaching people in conversation with the recognition that you're an ambassador of the kingdom of heaven in the midst of the kingdoms of this world? That's my hope. So the first 100 days of any new administration, which is what I consider this, because it's not really a new hour of programming here on Faith Radio. It's just new under and it's not even new for Paul Perot. Like, he's been at this a lot longer than I have. But it's the first 100 days.
Oh, sure. Make me feel old.
It's the first 100 days of our administration together. There you go.
There you go.
And so it's a good time to consider. It's a bit of a marker. And so we evaluate today. So here's my evaluation scale. On a scale of 1 to 10, how are we doing? There you go. You can let us know on our text line at 877-933-2484. On a scale of 1 to 10, how are we doing? Or you can always email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. Here are a few notes I made to evaluate our 100 days. It has been within this time period that it has occurred to me to begin asking the question about where in the Word are you? It's not as if I conceived of that question prior to this program. I actually conceived of that question during this show one day, and now I'm provoked to ask it over and over and over again. So where in the Word are you today? Not where in the world are you, not where in the news cycle are you, not where in your anxiety rhythms are you, but where in the Word are you today? We are called to abide in the one who is the very Word of God made flesh. So abiding in Christ, where in the Word are you today? We often answer that question by referencing a passage of Scripture, which I think is completely and totally appropriate and the way that I have been going about it. But yesterday in the conversation with a very young person, when I asked that question and made the observation that Jesus is the Word of God, he said, well, I don't know if I'm in the funny bone, but I want to be in the funny bone. So there you go. Where in the Word are you today? I'm in Mark 9 and John 17. It's also been during the last 100 days that I have started using this, salting my conversations with this. And that these are what I believe are the three most important words in every conversation. And those three words are, tell me more. Tell me more. When I am not certain what the mind of Christ is on a particular matter, or I know that I am talking in a conversation with somebody who vehemently disagrees with me, or has a worldview that is completely oppositional to my own, I find that the most effective three words to use are, tell me more. And then I'll leave you with this before we go to a quick break. And when I come back, I'm going to be talking with Nick Pitts from the Institute for Global Engagement about bringing the mind of Christ to the headline news of the day. So let me just leave us with this. Cultivating the mind of Christ on the matters of the day is what we are seeking to do here on Mornings with Carmen. Hopefully you are experiencing that. Hopefully we're helping you till the soil in your own life and plant seeds of God's words in your conversations throughout the day. Hopefully we are equipping you to sow peace in your encounters with others. Celebrate the harvest of righteousness that we witness in ourselves and around us in the world, all to the glory of God. We'll be right back.
Cause I hear a voice and he calls me every day.
the people who gives me great hope about the next generation is Nick Pitts. So I know, Nick, we have at least one person listening who thinks that we do not give significant cred to millennial Christians. And so because you are a millennial Christian, I am elevating you this morning as my exemplar. I want every person in the millennial generation to pattern themselves after Nick Pitts. There you go. That's what I have for you.
Good morning. Consider me grateful, President Carmen, for this 100th day of your of your reign, and I am exceedingly grateful for the opportunity to be here. But I'm a little questionable though about your judgment of wanting to make me the exemplar. But nevertheless, count me grateful.
I'm getting you a shirt. I think that I feel like people need hats and shirts and capes these days. In my administration, there would be hats and capes.
I like this. I like this a whole lot.
You know, the Anglicans have these like ermine like capes that you get when you reach the level of canon. I feel like Canon Carmen is a good title.
Oh, I feel good about that. I feel good about that. But yeah. As an individual that does not have a cape, I just want you to know that not all heroes wear capes.
It's totally true.
Internet slang.
My neighbor Pete now owns a cape because Matthew thought that Pete needed a cape because Pete rescued his chicken, whose name is Pistachio, from a coyote that was wandering around in the middle of the day, which, you know, that is a bad sign anyway. So there you go.
Oh,
Pete, our neighbor, has a cape, and it sounds like our friend Nick Pitts needs a cape too. Okay.
I love it.
Nick, welcome back, and we love talking with
you.
For folks who don't know, you can find Nick every single day at thebriefing.net. That's just thebriefing.net. What are you doing at The Briefing every day?
Yeah, so similar to what you do over the radio, I try to do over email. I try to think through and I scour the headlines of the news of the day and try to identify the top 6 to 8 stories that individuals will, one, be talking about, or two, reveal the spirit of the day. Help us to better understand what it is and how we do the things that we do. And then from that, try to understand the biblical perspective on it. If the word is a lamp to our feet and a guide to our path, it should also be able to illuminate the morning news headlines. And so everything from the situation with Iran right now to North Korea to a new study out of the Wall Street Journal that indicated that we can trust people more than we thought. I want us to help us think through those issues and then in turn help us think in light of eternity with those issues. Hopefully, one, to encourage individuals, then two, to be able to equip them for those conversations that they might have or any other types of things that they might be able to think and have the mind of Christ for.
And you do it beautifully. And one of the things that I love is that you pay for all the access. And so we can get a little window into some of these news headlines that may be behind a paywall. I want to jump to the Wall Street Journal piece. People are more honest than we think. And so if you were to go to thebriefing.net this morning, you would read these two paragraphs. People are more likely to return a lost wallet with money inside than an empty wallet, concluded this research project testing the tension between financial self-interest and honesty around the world. So to the surprise of researchers, people who found the wallets returned them more often when they had a large sum of money than if they had a small sum of money. Is that correct?
Yeah. What was so shocking, especially for those of us that are more skeptical of nature, and it's in light of this world that seems to highlight the worst of the worst. And we just kind of highlight highlight the kind of the negative stories today. In reality, people are a little better than what we think than what the internet wants to tell us they are.
All right. And then Nick's note says what? Like, tell people, because this is, I think, the really helpful thing is that you reflect and you often reflect on things that, well, I certainly would not think of.
Yeah, so I am. One, I found that music or a joke typically tends to soften the understanding because sometimes, as you know, when you talk into some of these controversial issues of the day, it can be really contentious. So I always try to start off with a joke, a musical lyric to help us to kind of soften our way into the conversation. So today it was Don't Stop Believing in People, Journey said, to help us understand, one, that according to the research, because I'm a skeptical type of guy, so I like to have research to help me understand the issue and context for the issue, is that trust has been something that's been evaporating within the American experiment over the past 50 years. In 1972, 50% of respondents said that they said most people can be trusted. Today, that number stands at 33% generally. And then when you look at millennials specifically, that number drops down to 19%. We just don't trust one another anymore. There are a variety of reasons why we might not trust one another. One, we don't know each other. Two, I think the internet does play a role, because we're living in a world of clickbait that only wants to highlight some of the negative stories, that if it bleeds, it leads kind of deal, to decrease our skepticism. But at the end of the day, what we're continuing to find is that not everyone is paying attention. Not everyone is clicking these stories. The social media doesn't reflect actuality. And in turn, what we're seeing is that people are a little bit more trusting than what we like to think that they are. But we also know that from the biblical narrative, the third part of the Nick note that I try to do in the daily briefing is try to illuminate the biblical perspective. And so we know Moses relied on Aaron, Elisha leaned on Elijah, and Paul confided in Timothy. That trust really is that bonding agent. And as Christians, we've been called to place the trustworthy message with trustworthy individuals as well. It's a key part of what it means to live for the glory of God and for the good of this world.
Trust is the primary currency of relationships, both interpersonally and around the globe. So when we come back from the break, I'm going to talk with Nick Pitts about maybe the rising level of trust with North Korea. That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. No church choir singing in my soul. I've got a sweet salvation, man. It's beautiful. I've got a heart. Nick Pitts expresses the faith that we share in Jesus Christ in a beautiful way. He brings it to bear on the headline news of the day every single day. You can check it out at thebriefing.net. Nick, tell us what is going on in our ongoing contentious, tension-filled relationship with North Korea.
Yeah, so apparently yesterday news broke that North Korea's leader, Kim Jong-un, received an excellent letter from President Trump. This continues their back and forth that they have. What we know from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is that he is willing to start negotiations at the drop of a hat. And so to continue the conversation, if your listeners probably remember a couple of months back in Singapore, where there was the second summit, talks broke down and the conversation ended abruptly and before scheduled time. Due to just an inability to be able to get onto the same page. What we know to be true, especially of the Trump administration relative to North Korea, is that they're trying to navigate through the tension of two competing truths. The United States, one, is known as the champion of human rights across the world, that we have been a strong advocate for human rights and to be an advocate against human rights abuses. But on the second side, what we know to be true, the second competing truth claim, is that we're living in a broken world, and sometimes you have to negotiate with less than stellar players. And so we know there's a strategic importance for us to be in talks with North Korea just because of the instability as well as their nuclearization process as well.
So the last time that our open conversation, which, you know, we would call it a summit, the last time that broke down, We all became very willing in the aftermath of that to very quickly believe that it was possible. Now, ultimately, this was discovered to not be true. But we all were very quick to believe that it was actually possible that North Korea executed the men who it was holding responsible for the deterioration of that conversation or that summit. I gotta tell you, Nick, that keeps me, although I might desire to hold out an olive branch, it keeps me mindful that the one with whom we are having a conversation right now is a bad actor and a person who is, you know, I'll just tell you, this is like at a personal, like heart level of challenge. I recognize that every meal I eat and every meal Jesus ever ate, he ate with sinners. And so every conversation that I have, including the conversations that everyone has with me, are conversations with sinners. But we are talking about a person who is not redeemed. Talk with us a little bit about like the feeling part of this.
Your listeners need to understand Kim Jong-un is an evil, evil man. He comes from an evil family that has, one, starved their people to the extent that they are now shorter than what they actually could be because he's starving them so much with food. They individuals, the 25 million individuals that go to North Korea right now that live in North Korea, they will work because the government mandates them to work, but they will not be paid for that work. This is just a part of living in North Korea. This is your room and board, you might be able to say. But this work, since it's not paid, they then in turn have to bribe North Korean officials so that they can skip their government mandated work in order that they can go work a second job so that they can make ends meet. That there's even reports that indicate that North Korean officials, they are willing, you can bribe them to the extent that you can murder someone. We're living in a world that just even last month, there was a report that came out that identified there's over 318 sites where they have used, the government's used to carry out public executions by firing squad of three individuals, that these individuals will fire on these dissenters of the state, that if you don't express enough loyalty to the regime, that you could be, one, put into a camp, or two, be executed in turn if you're worthy of the bullets that they shoot. I mean, we are talking about a very evil regime, but yet we still have to try from an American foreign policy standpoint to have conversations with these individuals just because the evil that they perpetuate within their borders has the propensity, because of their nuclear ambitions, to be perpetuated outside their borders. And that becomes very burdensome for us when we consider our allies, South Korea, as well as Japan in the area.
Mm-hmm. All right, so thank you for that that reflection on that, because I think it's just always helpful. You know, you and I may think when we enter into a conversation about North Korea that everybody's working with the same information, and so yeah. I just think that any time that we're highlighting the potential of a positive step forward, we need to recognize these are people who have no money in their wallet and therefore are definitely not trustworthy. If we want to circle back around to our first conversation.
Yeah. But here's the thing. And if we have enough time, here's the thing I want to encourage everyone to know, though, is that even in the midst of this evil, God is still working good. There was one individual I highlighted today that his story is JM. That's all we know is his initials, is because he's fearful for his life. JM escaped to China, became a Christian, but then was sent back to North Korea. When he went back to North Korea, he shared the faith with his family, even at risk of persecution and execution, and his mother came to faith. He left again to go back to China, where he became a pastor. Shortly thereafter, he found out that his parents were executed. Yet still to this day, because he loves his people and still believes in his country, he is willing to go to border towns, even though they're shutting down, they're really shutting down this underground railroad system that they have to try to get people out of the country. JM still finds himself going to the border to try to baptize and witness to people that are leaving the country, because you just can't pray, you can't proselytize in North Korea without fear of retribution. God is still at work in the midst of this evil. We just want to pray that God will alleviate some of this evil and bring about peace so that his gospel might flourish all the more within the Hermit Kingdom.
Oh, amen. So now everybody who's listening knows why I love Nick Pitts and appreciate his ministry. So you guys need to go to thebriefing.net and sign up for this daily dose of worldview analysis from a Christian perspective. And it really will equip you with the scripture that speaks to particular headlines of the day. Nick, thank you so much for being with us, as always.
And thank you so much on this 100th day of Carmen's reign.
All right, friends, we'll be right back. So one of the questions that you frequently ask me is, you know, what are Christians up to around the world? What is happening on the edges of what we might consider the mission frontier? And there is a resource online called Mission Network News, MNN. You can check it out at mnnonline.org. Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News is going to be here next. We're going to talk about the Ebola crisis in the Congo. We're going to talk about God on the move in Iran, the challenges that Syrian refugees are facing in Lebanon. And we're also going to talk about immigrants who are becoming church leaders in Sweden. All that up next here on Mornings with Carmen. So here at Faith Radio, we run on what's called a fiscal year, and our fiscal year ends on June the 30th, which happens to be this coming Sunday. So I'm thinking that today, if you're a part of what I will joyfully today call the Karma Nation, if you are a part of the Karma Nation and you appreciate what we're doing here, maybe you want to give a dollar a day for every day that so far we have been on the air under the administration of Paul Perreault and Carmen LaBerge. Mornings with Carmen gift today would be $100.
Does that make me prime minister if you're queen?
It does. Okay. Well, I'm not the queen. I am the SWMBO.
S-W-M-B-O.
I'm just letting you know that's my title. She who must be obeyed. There you go.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Okay. So the other way to go about this is to join something that we like to call Team 360. So that is an annual gift of you know, it's basically like a dollar a day, right? It's Team 360. We send you all kinds of like thank you gifts, and you know, it's a joyful team to be on. You don't get a shirt, but you do get a mug. Okay, so call us at 877-933-2484. Donate online at myfaithradio.com. If you are listening via the app, there's a donate button on there as well. We love for you to give where you listen. So go ahead and do that today. We'll be right back.
Although millennials hold many poor, impractical, and uninformed positions, all is not lost. This is Jim Garlow. There are some positive developments concerning positions millennials hold. For one, more and more of them identify as pro-life. In fact, they are the most pro-life generation since the Supreme Court delivered their Roe v. Wade decision in 1973. The reason might go back to millennial identification with social justice causes. But perhaps God has birthed in them his supernatural purpose to end the genocide of abortion in America. Millennials should also be praised for their moral clarity on the issue of human trafficking. Many have found their voice in strong and open opposition to this modern form of slavery. The good news is, when millennials commit to an issue they strongly believe in, the energy they wield can move mountains. Oh, that such energy might be used for the cause of Christ. This is Jim Garlow.
To boldly go where no one has gone before.
I love to talk from time to time with Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News. You can check it out online at mnnonline.org. Ruth, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back. It's Monday.
Now, you have some exciting personal news to share. You have returned home recently with some medals around your neck. Fill us in.
Yeah, well, I was privileged to race at the National Senior Games, and that was Albuquerque, New Mexico. I took bronze in the 200. I qualified for the 100. Travel mistakes and all the things that happened, canceled flight, made me miss the preliminaries for the 100 meters. So I never got to compete in the second event that I qualified for the Nationals for. But upon coming home, I was racing in another meet, and I took gold in both the 100 and the 200.
Congratulations. That is so exciting.
Thank you.
So exciting. Yeah. And your travel disruptions meant that someone else got to run who maybe would otherwise have not had the opportunity. And so we'll just celebrate on their behalf and give God all the glory and thank him for your health and just all that you do every day. So it's wonderful. Okay, now let's turn our attention. If people go to mnnonline.org right now, they are going to see a number of headlines that actually are fairly positive and right here in the United States, which I actually think is really cool. But as you scroll down, you're going to see a headline related to the Congo and the Ebola outbreak. Ruth, I'm just going to admit to you, this is not spiking in the news anywhere other than MNN. So tell us what's going on with Ebola in the Congo and, you know, and the larger threat to the region.
Well, the Ebola outbreak has been going on in the Democratic Republic of the Congo probably for over a year. We're talking maybe... It's probably been since last summer, actually, when we first got word of some of the earlier cases. And the concern is because of where Uganda sits with relation to the DRC, the borders that that country shares, is that people are going to be crossing the border and spreading the virus. So the World Health Association or the World Health Organization has been very concerned about the possibility of that outbreak in DRC spreading because of the location to South Sudan, Uganda, and Rwanda. And as of probably a week ago, there have been a number of cases that have actually crossed over. So Uganda is really concerned that the worst fears are being realized and that people are tracking the virus across the country borders, in spite of the fact that there's been efforts to try to have checkpoints to prevent people from traveling, just to get the word out about how to stay away from Ebola, how to really try not to get that contamination to spread even further. We talked with some of our friends at Compassion International, because Compassion is very active in Uganda. And right now, the word we have from the country director, Dr. Yona Kaperi, is that no Ugandan children sponsored by Compassion International have contracted Ebola. However, there is word that one child sponsored in the country had a relative die from the disease. So, again, this is something that's touching a lot of families, a lot of lives, in an area where you don't have a lot of economic bounce back, where you've already had either issues with civil war or with like the Lord's Resistance Army, or even with the poverty issues wiping out whole sections of families, and the AIDS virus really took out a number of generations in Uganda. So when you're talking about the vulnerability of families in these areas, this is something that is marking the concern for not only health officials, not only the NGOs that are out there trying to be helpful, but also ministries, because there's a lot of churches that are involved in Compassion International's ministry. So they're kind of putting out the word, again, prevention issues, just to try to make sure that you can keep things isolated and try to prevent the spread of the disease. So at this point, you know, what we're saying from Compassion International is they're asking you to pray with them as they go about doing the thing that they're doing, which is a lot of community health education kind of stuff, but also using things like radio to just get the word out, to talk to people about what's going on, because in these areas, a lot of people don't have access to TV. So radio is the way that they get information.
So if people were going to Google Uganda today, one of the things that they would learn that would be positive is that Uganda won at the Africa Cup of Nations finals, the first time in more than 40 years, upsetting the Democratic Republic of Congo in a 2-0 opening Group A match in Cairo. There you go. That's my good news about Uganda today. All right. So, Ruth, let's turn to Iran. You guys at MNN Online have a couple of headlines related to Iran. Let's talk about the one where we're talking about heart change.
Well, you know, again, this is a situation that, as we're looking at the overall political headlines, as you just, you know, look at Google and you see the tensions and the issues with the sanctions and all the difficulties that are coming about from that, you're kind of getting the impression of an Iran from maybe the 1970s, where Iran hates America. And that's not necessarily true, because our partners that are there, Heart for Iran is one of the big ones, they're saying that it's just a very small lens that we're getting our impressions through, and that most of the people in Iran, the majority of Iranians, are kind of feeling lost. They're feeling the impact of the sanctions, but they don't necessarily agree with what their leadership is saying and doing with regard to what the leadership is saying and how they're representing Iran. And as a result, you're talking about people who are very unsure about what their future is. They're afraid that the U.S. is going to attack. They're expecting any day now to have Tomahawk missiles raining down on them. They're really worried about these kinds of things. But at the same time, some of their main concerns are just being able to get food for the day, because the economic issues are so severe. And as a result, you see this huge disillusionment surfacing in Iran about Islam. Their leaders are the leaders of the Islamic world, calling the shots for the Shia around the world. And a lot of the people in Iran are like, well, if that's what it is, I'm not really sure that's what I believe. So they're pulling away from that a little bit, and they're kind of looking for hope and for truth. And that's where you have Heart for Iran and their subsidiary. I'm trying to say a word that I can't pronounce right now.
Subsidiary.
Yes, ministry, Mohabbat TV. And Mohabbat TV comes out with a message that is biblically grounded, but it is a message of hope. And people are flocking to that right now. So they're calling in and asking questions all the time because, you know, you have these fears that nuclear Iran is going to really get themselves into a situation where we're looking at a world war, and they want to know that there's something else out there to cling to that is true, that is unmovable, and the hope of the gospel is something that is attractive. So, you know, every time they have Heart for Iran or Mohabbat TV has a broadcast, they're getting hundreds of people calling them asking about Jesus and Christianity. So, you know, the message represents hope, and that's scarce right now in Iran. So a lot of ministries that are there are just saying, please continue to pray for Iran. Right now, the church in Iran, even though there's high persecution in there, the church in Iran is growing so fast, it outstrips the pace of China's church.
I mean, that's extraordinary, right? It's just absolutely extraordinary. We need to be praying for our brothers and sisters who are in Iran. We need to be praying for ministries on the ground in Iran. We need to be praying for the people of Iran. And even as we pray for the cessation of hostilities between our governments, we recognize that there is a bent toward war in the heart of those who are the Ayatollahs leading Iran. And they have been engaged in proxy wars around the world, certainly across the Middle East, in Yemen, in Syria, in other places. And so it's not as if they are allergic to war. We will see whether or not they have an allergy to a direct confrontation with the United States and its growing coalition of allies, which is something that our Secretary of State is actively working on right now in Saudi Arabia. All right. In our conversation with Ruth Kramer, we're going to continue in just a moment. She and I are going to talk about refugees. We're going to talk about refugees in Lebanon and the challenges they now face. And we're also going to talk about new immigrants becoming church leaders in Sweden. That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen.
I'm smelling coffee. Birds are singing just outside. Here comes your mercy streaming in with the morning light.
Returning to my conversation with Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News, you can check out what we are talking about at mnnonline.org. That stands for Mission Network News Online.org. Ruth, let's turn our attention to Lebanon. One of the reasons that the challenges in Lebanon are so great is it's a relatively small country, and it has had an influx of refugees from the civil war in Syria. That's really like at paralyzing numbers. So remind us about what the situation on the ground in Lebanon is like, and then tell us what these new concerns are there.
It kind of depends on the person you speak to, but generally speaking, the ministries that we partner with are telling us that the refugee population, the Syrian refugee population, is almost 25% right now in Lebanon. And there's already a financial crisis brewing because Lebanon really doesn't have the resources to cover this influx of population that are not able to contribute to the economy as a whole. Syrian refugees don't really have a standing in Lebanon. So they're in Lebanon and they're staying there, but they're not really recognized as refugees. They're not really registered to the government as refugees, so they get no services. And the land that they're staying on, you see all those pictures of the tent cities and things, the refugees are renting the land there and paying utilities for running water and electricity. So it's a difficult situation because they're also not allowed to have jobs legally in Lebanon. So that means they have a lot of the side work or work that's being paid under the table. And it's causing some other economic repercussions in Lebanon, where Lebanon is now changing some of the laws to try to, I guess, I don't want to say force compliance, but to try to protect the jobs of the Lebanese. So the one of the rules is if a small business hires a Syrian refugee, he has to hire 9 or 10 Lebanese to offset the Syrian refugee. And it's crushing burden. So you wind up with these other I don't know, survival tactics that are causing issues. And that is causing a lot of hostility within Lebanon because of the austerity measures that are being put in place right now in Lebanon. So people are blaming the waves of refugees. And you've got demonstrations coming through right now that are attacking the refugees in their camps in the Bekaa Valley. I know that there was one probably 2 weeks ago. It was a pretty severe attack. You also had a number of enforcements that came through these camps and tore down dwellings in Lebanon that were belonging to the Syrian refugees. So you had cement buildings that were homes that were being torn down, and then the refugees were being kicked out and being told to start over again with another just a tarp and a tent. And it looked terrible. But what Lebanon is trying to do is say, you can't stay here. We can't support you here. You need to go back home. And that begs the other question, which is there's a lot of people saying, well, Syria's war is mostly over now. You can go back home. You should go back home. Go home. Get. And the issues that we're hearing about that is it's really not safe to go back home yet because there's still a lot of conflict in the different areas. Keeping in mind, there's like 180 different groups that are fighting over different parts of Syria. So if you walk back into that environment, even though ISIS may have been removed from most of that conflict, you still have a lot of other stuff that's going on. And the fear is that when families go back, the men are being conscripted back into the army or thrown in jail because they deserted or what have you. And so the families are hesitant to go back. And also keeping in mind that there's nothing to go back home to. So their homes have been destroyed. There are no services. There's no infrastructure left. What do they go back to? And so ministries, Christian ministries in Lebanon have been trying to kind of help set the foundation for that and at least have a friendly face and a name that the refugees would recognize in Syria to try to welcome them back home. But again, the Lebanese restrictions have made that difficult to the point where assets have been frozen so that any ministry that's known to go from Lebanon that's going into Syria to try to set up a network, to try to set up a foundation of infrastructure for the Syrian refugees to go back to, finds themselves unable to do anything because they have no funds.
It's just a frustrating cycle of, I would tearing your hair out, throwing your hand. It's so challenging and grievous. And there are generations of people just really living in between. They are truly just living in, they're like living in a crease. And so let's be praying not only for these refugees, let's be praying for a real restoration in Syria. Let's be praying for God to make the resources available for ministries in Lebanon and actually for the country of Lebanon to be able to graciously host just an extraordinary number of people who have flowed across their border by their mercy and grace over the last, 8 years now. All right, let's turn our attention to Sweden, which has also been a nation that has readily received immigrants. Tell us what is going on there, because this is a positive story.
This is interesting. The Program for Theological Education by Extension is a ministry that's in Jordan. And we're going to call it PTEE for lack of just to shorten the whole thing down a little bit. And Education by Extension is basically a program that allows people to be educated over the internet. So that you don't actually have to go to a campus and go to classes and things like that. You can get your materials and resources digitally, which allows you to be able to participate in these courses anywhere you are around the world. And PTEE is specifically geared at Arabic-speaking leaders and trying to give them a theological education so that they can lead the church in their communities, wherever that community is. This story that we have involves a woman, we're going to call her Muna, and she's now leading courses in Sweden. Her journey started in Jordan, and through the different parts of life, just how she was living, she wound up having a lot of influence with different Arabic communities around the world. And her interest really was in sociology to kind of help with the refugee situation in all of the areas in the Middle East. you know, when you look at her family background, she was born in Jordan. They moved to Atlanta, Georgia. Later, she moved to London, and then she finally moved to Sweden and saw needs there as she was kind of trying to support immigrants in Sweden. And one of the things that she really wanted to do was bring the PTEE courses to Sweden, which didn't exist up until Muna got there. She herself being a graduate of PTEE certification, and she was trying to figure out how to bring that education to the Arabic speaking community in Sweden as an adult, where she was trying to work with some of the refugees and some people who were Christian refugees and others who were becoming new believers who wanted to lead their church communities. So she began kind of just feeling out to see where that program could go. And I think PTEE just started something within the last couple of years in Sweden. So she's the one who's qualified to teach it. And so now you have a PTEE extension in Sweden being taught by Muna. But the thing that she's saying right here is even though she's seen this dream realized, there's so much more need. She's one person covering an entire country. And just need more help, more hands on deck.
That's extraordinary. Yeah. And so in this and other ministries you want to connect with internationally, mnnonline.org is a great place to learn about what God is doing through his people around the globe. Ruth Kramer, thank you so much for bringing us these stories today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We'll be right back. So on this 100th episode of Mornings with Carmen, Paul Perreault and I and, well, others, Neil Stavem and everybody else who participates in bringing this broadcast to you over the airwaves on the Faith Radio Network, also online at myfaithradio.com and on the Faith Radio app, each and every one of us just wants to say thank you to you. Because if you're listening right now, then you're actually the one for whom God called us together and sent us into this ministry. We do this for you. We do this to God's glory and for your edification. And so we'd love to know how this ministry is impacting you. You can text me at 877-933-2484 or email me, Carmen at myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.